making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
All right, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Media Monarchy. This is the B-side of episode 90. Coming to you Monday night at 7:30 Pacific time, September 8th, 2008. Yeah. So I got a little bit to go over before I get too far behind and covering all this stuff as everything unravels in some way. A little bit of stuff that I wasn't able to go over on the show on 90 last Friday. So we'll hit up first Mythbusters show, I believe, on the Discovery Channel. Mythbusters gagged credit card companies kill episode exposing RFID security flaws. This coming from Consumerist. Credit card companies successfully nixed a Mythbusters segment exposing RFID's security flaws, of which there are many. This according to website Arbiter of Truth, as well as from the mouth of Mythbusters co-host Adam Savage.
The one I wish you would revisit more is RFID. Now, I know that... Does Carrie still have the RFID tag in her arm?
Dude, the RFID thing.
Yeah, why did you not...
Sorry.
I'm not...
It's not going to happen. Here's what happened. I'm not sure how much of the story I'm allowed to tell, but I'll tell you what I know. We were going to do RFID, and on several levels, you know, how hackable, how reliable, how trackable, et cetera, et cetera. And one of our researchers called up Texas Instruments, and they arranged a conference call between, I think, Tori and the head producer over there for the other team, Linda Wolkovich, and one of the technicians at Texas Instruments. They're supposed to have a conference call to talk about the technology on like Tuesday at 10 a.m. And Tuesday at 10 a.m., Linda and Tori get on the phone, and Texas Instruments comes on, along with Chief Legal Counsel for American Express, Visa, Discover, and everybody else. I mean, and I got chills just as I described it. They were way, way outgunned. And they absolutely made it really clear to Discovery that they were not going to air this episode talking about how hackable this stuff was. And Discovery backed way down, being a large corporation who depends upon the revenue of the advertisers. And now it's on Discovery's radar. They won't let us go near it. So I'm sorry.
No.
We are. It's just one of those things. But man, that was a really. Your story still gets a little white when he describes that phone conversation.
Well, you do have about 3,000 people in the room who aren't under such legal arrangements. Producers, so.
No, not.
So, in related news, there's also a post and a link for you about how to steal RFID credit card information with $8 worth of equipment from eBay. Not suggesting in any way that you would actually do that or want to do that, but it's just that easy. And of course, the update, the backpedal, the retractions always follow. Mythbusters co-host backpedals on RFID kerfuffle. This took about 3 days to happen. This from CNET. Mythbusters co-host Adam Savage is stepping back from public comments suggesting that legal counsel from several credit card companies led the Discovery Channel to pull the plug on an episode dedicated to security holes in RFID. And so that's CNET, and they also have their own links back to the original story of Adam Savage talking about the credit card companies squashing the episode. I never thought all that much of Mythbusters. I happened to catch a couple episodes saying at someone's house they had cable, which doesn't take long to watch a little bit of cable to realize, oh, that's right, I don't fucking miss this at all. But they did something about mind control and debunking mind control because they couldn't rig up bullshit things in the lab and didn't address any of the factual things that we know, that it's not going to be some contraption you make. It's going to be drugs and sedatives and repetitive sounds and music and being strapped to a bed with you and Cameron or Sidney Gottlieb or some fucking monster. Anyway, on slightly brighter side in that, it's creative and good investigations. three new 9/11 documentaries. Two we've mentioned before, one we have not. The first we have not. First from Newsday. And it's a documentary dedicated to late 9/11 first responder. Racked by pain and the ravages of leukemia, first responder Greg Quibel of North Babylon allowed film crews to record poignant moments of his life. For weeks, his visits to doctors and his struggles to pay medical bills were captured for a documentary called Save the Brave, which premiered at the Belmore Theater in Belmore. The film's opening is dedicated to Quibel, 53, who died at his home, friends said. Film features three other first responders living with 9/11-related illnesses. The movie had no actors in it. They were real-life heroes, said a hero who would know himself, John Field, the film's producer, who is president of the nonprofit Feel Good Foundation and advocates for sick 9/11 responders, feelgoodfoundation.com. Greg is proof that heroes are dying, and it's unacceptable.
9/11 is not over. The 9/11 Health and Compensation Act requires your support. It is the bill that's in Congress right now, the Maloney-Nadler-Fasella bill, to help the first responders who serve at Ground Zero. The 9/11 Health and Compensation Act is a bill that must be passed, and we need you to call your members of Congress and insist that they respond now and not leave our first responders behind for the great job that they did in New York. Every city that you're in right now listening to my voice, if there's an emergency right now, we have only our first responders to come save our lives. Remember, H.R. 3543, the 9/11 Health and Compensation Act. 9/11 is not over. Don't leave our responders behind. In just a few moments, I'm going to introduce you to some of the courageous men and women who serve at Ground Zero, the responders who tried to make such a difference and who now are paying a heavy price. Over 300 responders, law enforcement, EMTs, firefighters, have died since the 9/11 attacks occurred. We need your support for H.R. 3543 so that these responders have a way to repair their health, to go on with life as best they can, supporting their families. As you meet these men and women, you will better understand how their lives have been changed, and you'll hear from family members who express a deep appreciation for the sacrifice and the service that these men and women offered that day.
Second new documentary to cover is The Elephant in the Room. We did play a clip a couple weeks ago, and I believe we listened to Scott Forbes, who worked in the South Tower, and on the 8th and the 9th, he knows about the power downs. And so that clip's there, and actually the full documentary is up. They're imploring you actually to buy the DVD, if you would, please. In which case, you also get hours of extra stuff as well, but this from 9/11 blogger. The Elephant in the Room is a documentary following British filmmaker Dean Puckett through his journey into the 9/11 truth movement, a global movement of conspiracy theorists who believe that the official explanation about what happened on 9/11 is totally or partially inaccurate. The filmmakers travel from England across Europe into New York for the 6th anniversary of the attacks, where the film takes one final twist as we're introduced to the 9/11 first responders who are suffering from various grave health difficulties due to the toxic dust that they breathe and trying to help their country during the weeks after the tragic event. Told with a personal, hands-on approach that avoids advancing any one position, the film asks the question, are these crazy conspiracy theorists, or is 9/11 truth a credible political movement? Third, and finally on our list of new 9/11 documentaries, again, we've mentioned Jason Burmes's new Fabled Enemies. It's now released and up online, so again, you can watch the full thing up on Google Video, or you can buy the DVD and support the people who make it and make high-quality copies, and you know. So, a write-up, and we will hear an interesting clip, and that's one of the good things about Fabled Enemies. New stuff, and at least things put into a good context. But this from Paul Joseph Watson. Fabled Enemies is a departure from every other 9/11 truth film released so far. It comes off more as a spy thriller than a mere conspiracy romp. With tight editing, slick presentation, and sublimely complimentary backing music, the documentary draws the viewer in for an eminently watchable experience. The film begins by revealing how in the very hours after 9/11, Osama bin Laden's conviction of guilt in the court of public opinion was assured simply by constant repetition in the news media, and how the fairy tale of 19 hijackers with box cutters began to unravel. The film does not try to invent an alternative scenario behind what really happened on 9/11. It expertly demolishes the official version by concentrating on how bin Laden's network was protected every step of the way by hires up and the hijackers who were issued visas, while good FBI agents like Robert Wright attempted to penetrate the wider plot but were blocked from doing so. And we're going to hear a clip, I believe, about other targets.
There were almost certainly other targets. Maryland's governor on the morning of 9/11 stated that his police department had received threats prior to the attack, not only against the targets that had been hit, but others.
That came in today? You mentioned threats on Maryland facilities. These threats came in today?
Yes, the head of our state police, Dave Mitchell, received a list of 11 sites across the country that were targets. Supposedly, this list had been distributed prior to the explosions. Several of those sites were ones that were under attack.
Another target on that morning was Air Force One. Although it is never discussed, the perpetrators of the attack somehow got top secret codes that morning.
And Brian, what is the credible evidence that Air Force One could have been a target? These planes were some distance from Air Force One after.
The excuse was that, quote, we do not discuss, you know, we do not discuss intelligence information. Air Force One has been said to be a target in the past during President Clinton's trip to Bosnia during his first term, where they stopped in Aviano and switched out into three transport planes. Similarly, they were escorted by fighter jets, as they have in the past, while it is not routine. The White House insisting that the evidence was, and thus the zigzag flight path from Florida to Louisiana, the Air Force is insisting that the evidence is provable and credible that the aircraft and the White House were targets.
Ari Fleischer, the White House press secretary, would be pressed on this issue.
If you have a threat to Air Force One, it seems to be raising an additional threat that perhaps we don't know about.
I'm sorry? Raising an additional threat?
I don't think one of those planes, Ari, is that where the credible threat, or can you say, are we talking about something totally different?
You're asking me, in essence, what the source of information is, and I think the American people...
No, how have you accounted for those four planes and what their targets were? Is there, which, by deduction, you would assume there is something else that we're talking about targeting Air Force One?
There
is.
I'm not going to lead you any further as to speculating about what was the nature of the threat to Air Force One. But as I indicated, and I'll say it again, it was real, it was credible. I'm just not going to speculate about the nature of it.
On September 20th, 2001, WorldNet Daily would report much more regarding the threat. The terrorist message threatening Air Force One was transmitted in that day's top secret White House code words. As the clock ticked away, the Secret Service reached a frightening conclusion. The terrorists had obtained the White House code and a whole set of top secret signals. This made it possible for a hostile force to pinpoint the exact position of Air Force One, its destination, and its classified procedures. In fact, the hijackers were picking up and deciphering the presidential plane's incoming and outgoing transmissions. In the week after the attacks in New York and Washington, more hair-raising facts emerged. The terrorists had also obtained the code groups of the National Security Agency and were able to penetrate the NSA's state-of-the-art electronic surveillance system. They seemed to have at their disposal an electronic capability that was more sophisticated than the NSA. They also believe that the terrorists are in possession of all or part of the codes used by the Drug Enforcement Agency, the National Reconnaissance Office, Air Force Intelligence, Army Intelligence, Naval Intelligence, Marine Corps Intelligence, and the intelligence offices of the State Department and Department of Energy. Since no single individual has access to every top-level code at any given time, a single mole would not answer the case. It would have to be a large, widely spread number. U.S. experts do not believe bin Laden was capable of infiltrating double agents into the heart of the U.S. administration on a large scale.
So that's from Jason Burmes' new film, Fabled Enemies. And you can get it and read more about it and watch the whole thing on Google Video or go to FabledEnemies.com. If we shift and look at Econo Money, it's bad. And even as I come to you this evening, there's even more updates, but I'll have to save those for Friday's show. So Integrity Bank becomes 10th U.S. bank failure this year. We just had our 11th. So this is jumping back a few days. So Integrity Bank, 10th bank failure. This from Bloomberg. Integrity Bank of Alpharetta, Georgia, was closed by U.S. regulators. The 10th bank to collapse this year amid a surge in soured real estate loans stemming from the worst housing slump since the Great Depression. Integrity Bank, with $1.1 billion in assets and $974 million in deposits, was shuttered by the Georgia Department of Banking and Finance and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. They said, quote, depositors will continue to be insured with Regions Bank, so there's no need for customers to change their banking relationship to retain their deposit insurance, the FDIC said. Banks are being closed at the fastest pace in 14 years as financial companies report more than $505 billion in write-downs and credit losses since 2007. Half a trill in a year. We jump to the AP. Incomes of Americans plunge. Personal incomes plunged in July while consumer spending slowed significantly as the impact of billions of dollars in government rebate checks began to wane. The Commerce Department reported that personal incomes fell by 0.7% in July, the biggest drop in nearly 3 years, and a far larger decline than the 0.1% decrease that analysts had expected. Finally, the third bit of bad news on the economy tip. Again, the EAP report card, workers in bad shape. This Labor Day finds workers in worse shape than they've been in years, according to a scorecard released Monday by Rutgers University. In its first national labor scorecard, with a PDF download for you, Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations said more than 10% of Americans are unemployed, discouraged from seeking work, or underemployed. That is nearly a 25% increase from 1 year earlier. Professor Douglas Kruse, KRUSE, a labor economist who created the scorecard, said a sharp decline in the number of Americans able to find full-time jobs, along with growing consumer debt and health care costs, were causes for concern. Yeah, I would think so. If we shift now into a little bit more Nazi news, I should have covered this along with covering, you know, how the Mossad let Joseph Mengele get away. AP. More Nazi news. This from Alex Constantine by way of NPR in a three-part report. Breaking the silence of a secret Nazi POW camp in Virginia. And again, this is from National Petroleum Radio. About 2 years ago, National Park Service employees stumbled upon a fascinating and largely untold piece of American history. It involves a secret World War II interrogation camp at Fort Hunt, Virginia, not far from the Pentagon. During and right after the war, thousands of top German prisoners were questioned there about troop movements and scientific advances. Soldiers at the site also prepared special care packages for American POWs that they sent overseas. They included maps, radios, and other escape tools. Many of the camp's records were destroyed right after the war, and those who worked there were sworn to secrecy. Many veterans never spoke about it, even to family and friends, although the operation has been gradually declassified over the past two decades. The National Park Service, which now runs Fort Hunt Park, has been trying to piece together the story of the interrogation facility codenamed P.O. Box 1142 during the war. Now, there's links in there. P.O. Box 1142 has its own Wikipedia page, the Brotherhood of P.O. Box 1142. We link you to the Park Service's Fort Hunt Park page, and you can hit up the three parts of the NPR story, and you can hear the audio. Paperclip. That's all I gotta say. And I'm gonna move on to more Minot. Why not? Lost launch devices, sexual lost launch devices, sexual abuse, and tampering. Three crew members removed over allegations of sex abuse and equipment tampering. Make sure you can make the bad joke and say it's the same thing. This is from the AP. The Air Force says that at least three ballistic missile crew members at bases in North Dakota and Montana have been taken off the job, while the military investigates allegations ranging from sexual abuse to missing classified components used in underground launch control centers. The Air Force announced that an officer who earlier worked at Minot Air Force Base's 91st Space Wing notified the military in May that he and another officer had lied about destroying classified launch components in 2005. Quote, "They were supposed to destroy them, and they signed documents saying they destroyed them," said Major Lori A. Arreno on Air Force, an Air Force spokeswoman. Instead, she said, quote, "They took them home." More Minot. Now, of course, we covered the brutal side of the RNC on episode 90 with the police and the raids and Gustav and all that. I did have a post up the day before the RNC. Storms, plans, raids, and schemes. Some of this is all now too familiar. But this is jumping back Sunday, August 31st. So a little bit of a flashback here. McCain may deliver convention speech from disaster zone. This is from Think Progress. Politico reports that the landfall of Gustav has forced the Republicans to scramble their plans. And so it was all already in here. President Bush wasn't going to attend, and that John McCain may scramble the thing and deliver his acceptance speech from the hurricane-stricken areas so they can run down there and grandstand and, again, act like they care about people and also to CYA and not have another Katrina. And so there's tons of links in there. You got the AP, you got Politico, Huffington Post, Sky News, Reuters. Yeah. GOP considered delaying convention. That's from the Washington Post. But if we jump to Salon, and we know that this was something that Glenn Greenwald kept up on, massive police raids on suspected protesters in Minneapolis. Protesters here in Minneapolis have been targeted by a series of highly intimidating, sweeping police raids across the city involving teams of 25 to 30 officers in riot gear with semi-automatic weapons drawn, entering homes of those suspected of planning protests, handcuffing and forcing them to lay on the floor while law enforcement officers search the home, seize computers, journals, and political pamphlets. Members of the St. Paul Police Department and the Ramsey County Sheriff's Department handcuffed, photographed, and detained dozens of people meeting at a public venue to plan a demonstration, charging them with no crime other than, quote, fire code violations. And also, the Sheriff's Department sent teams of officers into, and again, this is old, at least four Minneapolis homes where suspected protesters were staying. And again, there's also more links, and you know there's more updates in my updated story, but even right in there, we got CNN and Minnesotan Independent and New York Times, and a lot of videos as well from Glenn Greenwald and also Fire Dog Lake and the other liberal bloggers. Two videos posted separately, but provide quite the contrast. So, we have Obama telling America to pretty much get ready for more war. This is from Russia Today. Barack Obama's fired a stern warning to Russia as he accepted the Democratic presidential nomination and officially launched his campaign for the White House.
I will rebuild our military to meet future conflicts, but I will also renew the tough, direct diplomacy that can prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons and curb Russian aggression.
So that's our change agent savior in a quick little soundbite. Watch out, Russia. Watch out, Iran. Watch out, Pakistan. Watch out, everybody. Now, let's flip over to the other side. Putin says, America, you're provoking wars for political gain. The Times Online. Vladimir Putin accused President Bush of orchestrating the war in Georgia in a plot to get John McCain elected to the White House.
At this time, I was in Beijing and had an opportunity to have a brief discussion with the President of the United States. George told me that no one wants a war. I hoped that the U.S. administration would intervene to stop the aggression of the Georgian leadership, but nothing of this kind happened.
you've always enjoyed, over your period as president of Russia and still now, a very close personal relationship with US President George W. Bush. Do you think that his failure to restrain the Georgian forces on this occasion has damaged that relationship?
Of course it has damaged our relations, first and foremost, interstate relations. But the thing is not only that the U.S. administration has failed to restrain the leadership from committing this criminal act, but in fact equipped and trained the Georgian army. But I have some other comment to add. Even during the Cold War, during the time of tough confrontation between the Soviet Union and the United States, we have always avoided direct clashes between our civilians, let alone our servicemen. We have serious reasons to believe that directly in the combat zone, citizens of the United States were present. And if this is the case, then the suspicion arises that someone in the United States has on purpose created this conflict with a view to exacerbate the situation and create a competitive advantage for one of the presidential candidates in the United States.
These are quite astounding claims. Just to be clear, Mr. Prime Minister, are you suggesting that there were US operatives on the ground assisting Georgian forces, perhaps even provoking a conflict, in order to give a presidential candidate in the United States some kind of talking point? And if you are, suggesting that, what evidence do you have?
Я вам сказал, что если подтвердятся факты присутствия американских граждан в зоне боевых действий,
I've told you that if the facts are confirmed that US citizens were present in the combat zone, that it means only one thing, that they could be there only on the direct instruction of their leadership. And if this is so, then it means that American citizens are in the combat zone, performing their duties, and they can only do that following a direct order from their leaders and not on their own initiative. Ordinary experts, even if they are providing training in military matters, should do that. Not in a combat zone, but at a training ranges and training centers. I repeat, this needs to be further checked out. I'm telling you this based on what our military told me.
Two guys, two very different takes. Which one is the change agent and which one's the Antichrist? I don't know. This is jumping back. Now we're going back in time, further back in time. August 30th. This is Saturday. So this is, we were getting out of the DNC. John McCain busts out with Palin, and Hurricane Gustav is swooping in. Nagin on Gustav, quote, "This is the storm of the century." So AP has FEMA predicted Gustav to be a Category 5. But more importantly, the AP also reported that with an eye on Gustav, Blackwater seeks personnel. Security contractor Blackwater Worldwide is seeking personnel that could possibly be deployed into areas affected by Hurricane Gustav. You can also hit up Raw Story for video and more. The Moyoc-based company issued a call for law enforcement officers and armed security officers with a link to legitgov.org, and she reprints their full posting. So looking for all those people who already have the credentials to work in such an environment, including those with arrest powers. Blackwater responded to Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and reported of pulling 128 people to safety. The company started work there without a client, but won both government and private sector business within days. So they basically show up and illegally do a job and then ultimately get hired to legally do a job. Their job being ultimately carrying out illegal orders like confiscating guns and things like that, but, you know. Also, Global Hawk, and I'm not sure of the follow-up on this, and I have to check on this. Global Hawk may be called for storm duty. This from the Sun Herald and from military.com. Something that's been manufactured in part right here on the coast could forever change the face of hurricane predictions, hurricane monitoring, and even hurricane relief. But whether it's detecting landmines in faraway countries or monitoring contraflow in a hurricane evaluation, it's all the same equipment, officials with Northrop Grumman said Wednesday. And if Gustav becomes enough of a threat, the Global Hawk's capabilities might get a hurricane test run. And you can hit up Wikipedia, read more about Global Hawk. It's a drone. It's a UAV. And then finally, on the pre-Gustav evacuation tip, mandatory evacuations to begin Sunday morning in New Orleans. This from CNN. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin ordered a mandatory evacuation of the city beginning 8 a.m. Sunday, but urged all residents to consider escaping, the mother of all storms. You need to be scared, you need to be concerned, and you need to get your butts moving out of New Orleans right now. This is the storm of the century. Again. Our city of Portland has had its own storm recently of the black helicopters over Portland for DOD terror drills. Now, I think I've already played some clips from Alex Ansari and Clyde Lewis talking about the black helicopters, but Clyde Lewis was on episode 167 of Outside the Box with Alex Ansari.
Now, Clyde, you've said in the past it's not so much what we believe, but what they believe. So let's take a look at 888.
Okay.
Okay. What's your take on that date itself?
Well, 888 is a symbol of the Ouroboros. It is the number of infinity. It's also the Mobius Strip. It's a symbol of the Mobius Strip. It's the idea that if you empower that number, 7 plus 1, the God number plus 1, the creation of whatever, most magicians, most dark magicians say that the number 8 can be utilized. You've heard of behind the 8 ball as a way to keep people in suspense or to keep them in a catch-22 or to keep them fearful of what the next movement is going to be. These are types of things that they love because it gives them an opportunity to empower those types of things with an eclipse that even makes them more powerful. We are under the shadow of the eclipse for at least 1 month. You take a look at the Pope. Pope John Paul II died during eclipse. He was born during eclipse. Princess Diana was killed the night of an eclipse. These people move like this, and it's really creepy how they move. But if you take a look at coincidences, they're not really coincidences anymore. These people move. The 888 number was the number that they used to move in the 48th parallel, and Georgia and Russia were at war on that date. And I remember somebody came up to me and said, well, Clyde, you said something big was going to happen on 888, and nothing happened. I go, what about the Georgia War? Oh, yeah, we all forgot about that war. It's a war that people are forgetting about. They should pay attention to it, because this is that war. I am sure this is what it is. I hate to sound like a Jack Vanity or a Falwell or anything like that, but think about it. This is the war that has 60 million Christians in this country waking up and saying, oh my God, this just might be the thing. I've had people come up to me and say, have you thought about who the Antichrist is, Clyde? Think about it. All this stuff is happening and people saying, Barack Obama. I'm saying, not Barack Obama. They say, well, who do you think? And I know who I think. I have my ideas, but you know, this isn't what this is about. It's about enabling these people to continue their police state activities, to continue glorifying the military-industrial complex, and watching the candidates and how they react and how they vote when it comes to war and the war movements. And that's what I think people should pay attention to.
You know, what's interesting in terms of numbers and symbols is they do have a sense of power. It's just a matter of how you choose to use it.
Well,
they certainly believe in it. And
666, what do you think of when I say that?
Exactly. You think of what has been programmed into you to think about.
2012, what do you think of when I say 2012?
I think about the planet shifting.
Exactly, planet shifting. You think about the end of the world for some people. I mean, numbers do have power.
Mm-hmm.
9/11, there you go. There's a number. What do you think of when I say that? You don't think of dialing up the police anymore. You think of two towers coming down in the shape of an 11, toppling over, fire, brimstone, hell, no matter what. That's what you're thinking of. Numbers are empowered by events, and numbers are empowered by events that may happen. Well, there is something that I have learned, because a lot of things that I talk about on my show, and a lot of people who are familiar with my show know, that I try to mix politics, symbolism, and what I call darkest magic, because I have learned a lot of things from shaman and darker magicians. And one of the things you learn about is empowered sigils. And one of the most important empowered sigils there is was the American flag that flew over the World Trade Center and how they would always bring it out during baseball games. Can you imagine how much death power went into that flag the day those people all died that day, and how we continually wheel that out and we continually want to generate that meme? We do it in our films, we do it in our books, we do it in our music. The more generation of a meme or a memetic trigger that get you angry or frightened or sad is what they want. They're manipulating you with all sorts of symbols, numbers, TV shows, music, films, and whatever they say goes. You take a look at the Obama campaign. Take a look at all the pictures you see of Barack Obama. He's got halos around his head. In fact, they're putting him in a Greek temple tonight.
We'll get into that.
We're going to get into that in just a little bit. I mean, what kind of symbolism is that when you're standing in a Roman or Greek temple with huge pillars. I mean, they say White House, but I say something more. Think of another senator that stood in a temple with white pillars, and what happened to him? That was kind of interesting.
We're not supposed to remember the past, Clyde.
Oh, okay, that's true.
Alex Ansari and Clyde Lewis documenting the invasion of black helicopters that recently swarmed the Portland area without any warning. In the episode 167, they also discussed the latest developments with current U.S.-Russia conflict as tensions in the Black Sea mount. So, speaking of the black helicopters over Portland, one of our free weeklies here, Willamette Week at WWeek.com, every week they have a rogue of the week pointing out somebody bad in political or public affairs. They at least, fortunately, this last week call out Mayor Tom Potter as the rogue of the week. As I go here to the dirty, dirty print in my hands. The hysteria over last year's Homeland Security drills was silly. Yeah, top off four, that was silly. But last week's Navy SEAL exercises, which had helicopters buzzing over downtown while loaded with armed men, were worth fussing over. Last year's drills were publicized well in advance. This time, no warning, no explanation. One man, this week's rogue, could have prevented the confusion. In November 2007, the Navy asked Portland Mayor Tom Potter for permission to hold the training. In a warm letter dated April 7th, Potter gave the nod to, quote, explosive breaching, fast rope insertion, live fire, low power training ammunition, sim munitions, flashbang surveillance, and counter surveillance. Sounds fun. If you're a Navy SEAL. If you're a Park Blocks retiree or a Somali refugee, you might interpret the sudden uniformed presence differently. For 5 months, Potter and the police bureau neglected to tell anyone about the upcoming exercises. The military said it didn't want the training to become an air show. Potter should not have accepted that explanation. Portlanders had a right to know. Other mayors have handled this situation better. In February, in Toledo, Ohio, Mayor Cardi Finkbeiner kicked out the Marines because their displays of force frightened people. Finkbeiner took some heat, but he was right. We wish Potter had shown more courage, or at least asked more questions. Perhaps he was misled about the nature of the exercises, as Denver's mayor suggested had been the case in his city in June. I think next time we would handle it differently, says Potter spokesman John Dussard. Let's hope so. So that's Mayor Tom Potter, Rogue of the Week, here in the local Willamette Week, WWeek.com. And they just called it out, you know, Ohio terror drills, Denver terror drills, Portland terror drills, and it's up to the actual public political structure to put a stop to this shit. Lastly, on this extra episode here, and this was the story that broke when I was doing episode 89 and posted up the story later on. It's now exploded into just the most bizarre amount of tabloid, bizarre, salacious conspiracy abortions and children, and I stopped keeping up with it. It is kind of bizarre. All the stuff swirling around Sarah Palin, it's all smoke and mirror dog and pony show bullshit anyway. It doesn't fucking matter. These puppets don't run shit. But if we just glance at some of the first things I posted up again, this was before we've had a week and a half of garbage spilling out about Palin, who, when I finally heard it, was like, that's it, she does. She looks like Peggy Hill from King of the Hill. But initially, from Wikinews, Alaskan Governor Sarah Palin chosen by McCain as VP. There's lots of links in there. However, immediately following from Think Progress, Palin under ethics investigation for abuse of power in Alaska. And Chris Floyd had Lady and the Gramp, the sinister diversion of the Palin selection. So while the Palin brouhaha provides a measure of comic relief, in the end, it's just another ludicrous distraction from the main issue, the one that is never discussed openly in the campaign, except as Arthur Silber notes below, inadvertently, the fact that both major parties and their candidates are co-conspirators in the most savage and extensive war crime of the 21st century, the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Lastly, from the People's Voice, with Palin, McCain ups chances of beating Obama. I think they go on to give her more credit, but initially, though, they are right. It does up the chance of beating Obama and Biden. She appears to be sidled up with religious right, and I guess now Dobson's on board, so that means all the lemmings will fall on board, fall in line. It's disgusting. I don't fucking know how this is all going to shake out, but it is funny to watch all the garbage with Sarah Palin's redneck past. Folds 5, Your Redneck Past, and that's going to do it for this special exclusive edition of MediaMonarchy.com, episode 90. It's the B-side, just trying to catch up before we fall behind. Keep listening to the show, keep checking out the site, MediaMonarchy.com. I'll keep making it for you. We'll get through this together. My name's James Evan Pilato. This is MediaMonarchy.com. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
same boat on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.